this court case kind of indicates. They can also be oof, I think is the how the French would say it.
Oof.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that just means beef.
It means egg.
Oh, right, yeah. I mean, I've got lemons in. Anyway, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's interesting to say because you're right. The internet is evolving. You know, things are, I believe, getting better. You know, there are, for example, the Trevor Project, which is the leading charity in the United States that works to tackle specifically bullying around LGBTQ identities. So a lot of folks who are victims of bullying related to their sexuality, race, and or gender would use the Trevor Project in the States. They've now moved away from X, formerly known as Twitter. And a lot of people have, you know, a lot of organizations are like, you know, it's like being in a, you know, it's like being in Dundas Square in downtown Toronto. It used to be like being there on a Monday around the time everyone's going to work, you know, that you get your vocal, you know, God will save you preachers over here. You've got your people yelling at you at the street and, you know, but you expect that. It's a public forum. It's a public square. Expect that. Since Elon Musk bought it out, it's now more like Dundas at the closeout of a Jays game where they all lost. It's not quite as safe, not quite as quiet, and definitely a little bit more yelling than there was prior. And there's organizations like the Trevor Project who are like, look, we deal with vulnerable young youth. They're looking for us to engage with us. They're often commenting on spaces that can be commented on by other people. And do we want the drunks of the, in the square in that same room? Do we want to have this conversation in that space? And the answer is no. And they're leaving. Yeah. And what they found is that most youth now are getting that kind of content and that kind of engagement through TikTok, which is not a public forum.
No.
It is curated. It is algorithm-driven for you pages. But, you know, you don't, you're not going to have people stumble into you and yell at you so much on TikTok compared to other particular wide-open drunken forums like my analogy here to X.
Also, Instagram and Snapchat have their space as well. Now, I don't mind the wild west of the internet. I don't mind spaces where you go there and it's literally everyone, including people you don't want to talk to. There's a time and a place for that. There's a space for that. There is a need for that. But I also understand that organizations like this do need a curated space that is a lot more moderated and a lot more protected. So I get it. So the fact that they're leaving X, which I think universally, because if everyone calls it formerly known as Twitter, what are we doing? But anyway, that's not the space for them anymore. And, you know, best of luck on your next platform. Maybe Twitter shouldn't have been that space. I don't know. That's a completely separate organization. But I do think there is a need for that sort of Wild West pseudo lawlessness, not complete lawlessness, because even the Wild West had rules. You know, there's certain things you don't do. Otherwise, the posse gets formed. So I think there is a space for that, but unfortunately, you know, organizations like this do not really fit into that mold that much.
Well, we'll be keeping an eye on that and other stories as they develop. Now, we are going to be jumping to our next track for today. I'm just making sure that I've got it in front of me. And I believe I do. This is Golden Days by Jess Ray. It's Americana. It's folk. They are Canadian. And we will be back just after this.
I don't know anyone who runs the queue to the place of ideas. Just something new. I was there once, and boy, I flew. Now I tread lightly with holes in my shoes. looking up instead of moving through. I'm always eating from the sweetest spoon. I'm always eating from the sweetest
And welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name remains Luke Smith.
And I am back as well. And my name is still Sebastian.
I want to cover two gay bashing stories. Ooh. Separated by about 50 years.
Okay.
So in 1987... A young gay man was brutally murdered. So let me find the name of the man, Raymond Keem. Mm-hmm. So he was 43. He was beaten in New South Wales. The guy responsible for it, the ringleader, is a man by the name of Bruce Early, but he was known as Spider. Back in the 80s, a much more menacing name, Stanley Spider Sutton, was his more menacing 80s name. But anyway, he was, you know, it was that time when you would, quote, roll a queer, end quote. Back in the 80s, a lot of gay men were beaten just for being gay. Now, unfortunately for, not that it really makes a huge difference, but for Raymond Keem, he was straight. I think he'd been married. He had children and was seeing another woman at the time and made the grave mistake of needing to pee whilst crossing a park, and on exiting the washroom was beaten up by Spider or Early and some other goons of his. Now, he has just been sentenced to 22 years in prison for the murder of Raymond Keem. So just the now. New South Wales, just this past like week.
Oh wow!
So they issued out a sort of call for evidence, sort of diving into cold cases. And I think from what I can tell, somebody ratted him out.
Oh,
so there we go.
Pretty simple.
He was arrested in his home after a $1 million reward was offered for information leading to a conviction in the case. So he was based in Victoria in Australia. He was then extradited over to New South Wales, where he was arrested, charged, and now convicted of the murder of Raymond Keem. It's worth noting that... Early or Spider, as he's also known, it was a hate crime. They were targeting gays. He himself has since come out as bisexual, saying that he was struggling with his own sexuality throughout the 80s. But it's not right to take it out by murdering people.
I mean, this is a good news, bad news, mostly bad news, obviously. But the good news is that that sort of reassuring feeling that cold cases can get resolved, and that a lot of the cold cases from within the community, because a lot of people were harmed in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And knowing that there can still be justice even decades later, that that is a possibility, sort of a silver lining.
There have been also justice in the Sligo murders. Did you recall those? They happened about, I want to say, last April.
Ooh, it sounds familiar. Refresh my memory.
Yeah, so Yusuf Palani, who is 23 in Sligo, has this year, it was just last year, has been found guilty of the murders of Aidan Moffat, 42, and Michael Snee, 58. He also repeatedly stabbed Anthony Burke, 50, multiple times in the head. Now, I'll spare you the most gruesome of details, which do include decapitation. But the murders were highly frenzied attacks, dozen-plus stab wounds to the face and head in both cases. Now, Yusuf Palani claimed that he was hearing voices, that he was, quote, quick to anger, and that he was mentally unwell. The judge, however, disagreed, noting that on a previous occasion, he had had sexual relations with Burke. Palani claimed he wasn't gay. However, the prosecutors indicated that there was consensual intercourse on all three occasions, including by the man that was that had survived. Mm-hmm. So he was again arrested. He was just sentenced. Sentenced to a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get the exact, I think 20 years, two life sentences and 20 years for the third attack, all to be served concurrently, mm-hmm. so one after the other. So it is unlikely that neither Yusuf Palani will see the light of day again, or Early, aka Spider, mm-hmm. Will also see the light of day as free men. So yeah, it's interesting that they both got resolved this week.
Yeah,
horrific abuse, you know, 30, 40, 50 years apart. However, the things that are common between them is unsettling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, as I said, like, it's just strangely comforting to know that cold cases can and do get resolved. Well, I mean, the one case isn't a cold case, but in that case, you could just say the there has been a feeling for a long time that attacks against members of the community never go punished. That is not true. They don't go punished perhaps as much as they should, but it is a non-zero number, and that is comforting.
There is an actual good news story, though. Okay. Nobody dies. So, you know, that's a solid start.
Right.
You know, our level of good news is lack of death.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm optimistic. The Latvian parliament has just voted to allow for same-sex couples to establish civil unions. So in Europe, they are joined by other countries like Romania, Bulgaria, Croatia, and Hungary, and we'll move to Hungary in just a few minutes, mm-hmm. That don't have civil unions. It's a huge issue with the courts.
Mm-hmm.
You may recall that there was a news story earlier this year when the Latvian head of state is now openly gay.
Okay.
Let's fast forward, you know, 5 or 6 months, and the legislature seems to be catching up and approving same-sex partnerships in Latvia. So for Latvian folks, this is excellent, great work in the right direction. Things like inheritance and adoption, still got some work to do there. Mm-hmm. Still nowhere near the sort of equal rights that we enjoy here in Canada, or rather, they face barriers and prohibitions that don't exist here in Canada.
Right.
You know, and but it is 100% with lack of death, good news.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I was wondering about that. I had to look that up because I was under the impression that Latvia was one of the countries with the highest rates of atheism. And I thought it was kind of weird that they were this late, but it was actually Estonia that I was thinking of. Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, with apologies to those countries, they're kind of small and they all neighbor each other.
Outrage. Our Latvian listening base is just up in arms.
Actually, I grew up in Burlington. There's a lot of Latvians in Southern Ontario. They are actually might be Latvians listening to me right now. So with apologies to you. Yeah. Yeah.
We would like to apologize to all three Latvians who have tuned in for today's show. All right. Now, I mentioned Hungary. Now, they have been getting into a bit of a brouhaha. The World Press photo exhibit was in Budapest in Hungary. Mm-hmm. Now, this fundamentally, photos in news is foundational. You know, the idea of a photo speaks 1,000 words and headline images and so on. It
There are individual photographs that have changed the course of politics and have ended wars, have started wars.
Absolutely.
Photography is a very, especially journalism photography, is a very big deal.
Absolutely. Well, the directors of the Hungarian National Museum were instructed to prohibit entry to the photojournalism exhibit to anyone under the age of 18 in accordance to the law after a, I think it was a state senator or a senator of the state of Hungary, I should correct, not to be confused with the US states, happened to go by, he was a member of the political party, Jobbik, filed a complaint with the culture ministry saying that it violated the Child Protection Act. Now, the photojournalism exhibit contained no nudity, no explicit representations of graphic, you know, it's a news journalism. You think maybe it's pictures of dead children from Palestine or what have you. The kinds of things that one would expect could well invite a visceral response, maybe edging towards not doing that. But that wasn't the case. The issue at hand was one very specific exhibit. So in 2022, in July, in Manila, in the Philippines, Hannah Reyes Morales, on behalf of the New York Times, took photos of a community of LGBTQ elders. I think there's like 10 or 20 of them. They all live in the same house. And they that's it. They are literally, it's like a gay retirement home.
Right.
That's the gist of the story. They wear some makeup, but they're fully clothed. They're smiling. They're having a good time.
Half the pictures are just, because some of the pictures are posted online. It's just a picture of a guy.
Yeah. It's an a face guy. Behind some beads. An old man behind some beads.
Yeah.
And it's the fact that it's gay people that are not unhappy. They haven't killed the gays. Is enough that children need protecting from an image of just a man with some beaded curtain. Like, I encourage folks to look up Home for the Golden Gaze to get a sense of just how ridiculous this is.
Pretty tame.
There is, you know, people are saying, like, look, this image is not going to make people gay.
No.
An old man with a tiny smile behind the beaded curtain, fully clothed.
Yes.
Is not going to incite homosexuality.
Right. Right.
Did it break the law?
I've been to photography exhibits before, and quite often, if you don't read the fine print next to it, it's just a picture. It's a picture of a building. It's a picture of a lady. It's a picture of a car. It's a picture of a tree. And if you don't get the story behind it, it's not quite so meaningful. Sometimes it can be quite deep. So it'll be pictures of special events, pictures of bad special events. But quite often it's just a photo that happened to have accompanied an article on something else. Like it'll be a journalism piece on, I don't know, the housing market crash. And it'll be a picture of a car on cinder blocks. But if you don't know that that's what it is, it's just a picture of a car on cinder blocks. Most photos and journalism exhibits are like that. And it wasn't announced in bright neon letters on every photograph, this is a homosexual man. It was just, this photo belongs to this exhibit. Then you read the little panel next to it in tiny little 12-point font, which...
Yeah, with your magnifying glass,
And then you're like, oh, okay, that is an elder gay man in the Philippines. And if you didn't read that tiny little thing, it would just be a picture of a guy. And
you know, that's to put it another way, in that same exhibit is the photos of the war in the Ukraine and the horrific carnage caused.
Yes.
That, fine.
Yes.
Roll your 10-year-old out and take a look at the destruction and death in the Ukraine. But a man smiling in heels, unacceptable. Just, you know what I mean? You know, and I think that sort of, it really points to the ridiculousness of it. Well, we will keep an eye on that as it develops. Now, Kenya is proposing another anti-LGBT law, the same one, sort of patterned after the law in Uganda.
Right.
Now, one of the professors in the one of the large universities there has released a report saying that this particular law, if introduced, could cost the economy of Kenya up to, I think it's 28 billion USD in terms of its economic impact.
Ooh, okay.
And breaks it down. It took a little bit of digging. Thankfully, the East African was the only one that actually did the effort of reading the report and sharing the details. Because, you know, the further down the rabbit hole you go, the more generic the title and less details they have.
Right.
But what he points out to the professor, let me get his name here. Professor Fred Ogolo, who is at a number of institutions. I did have him looked up. Here we go. He is the director at the Institute of Strategy and Competitiveness. He's on the board of the Archdiocese of the Nairobi Health Board, senior lecturer of strategy and decision making at the Strathmore Business School, which I believe he was recently let go from, however, unrelated. And he has a few other titles and a few other places, but very well established social studies professor in Kenya. He kind of breaks it down and he's like, look, there is about $3 billion a year in economic aid and development from the US, and they have put into their economic and aid development equal rights as being needed to be protected.
Right.
In addition, there is another $4.8 billion for development aid by the EU. The EU also has a very similar rule for the requirement for equal rights. On top of that is another $16 million in humanitarian funding from the EU, as well as another $1 billion that's been approved by the IMF, and another $500 million from the IMF to build resilience to climate change. So when you add all of these up, all of these agencies told Uganda, we talked a couple of weeks ago about the World Bank cutting off any new loans, and we talked about the US State Department removing Uganda from their aid initiatives. But, you know, this is a Kenyan professor in Kenya going like, look, don't get caught up in the frenzy of, oh my God, save us from the gays.
Yes.
Because the impact of this, is tens of billions in international aid that streams into Kenya. And the taps could be turned off. That's essentially the key warning here.
Yes.
Well, I don't know if it's gonna, I don't know if the money is gonna speak on this front, but I think it's a conversation that wasn't really had as strongly in Uganda compared to what's now a conversation happening in Kenya.
Well, the trick is that in Uganda, when the law was first introduced, I do remember there were legal scholars in Uganda saying that it was unconstitutional and it violated other standing laws on the criminal code in Uganda. Kenya, it might be very similar, that they could just strike it down on a legal basis that it violates something in the Kenyan criminal code. A lot of these things are very heavy-handed. They're vaguely worded. They're difficult to enforce, in some cases impossible to enforce. And it sets you up for failure right from the start, basically. So I can imagine this might be a mitigating factor, but if they take the legal route, they may not even need to go this far, hopefully.
With that being said, on that lovely bombshell of a note, we are done for this week. We've run out of time. Don't forget to stay tuned for more shows. We are playing out with In the Matters by Siski. I have been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. Thank you for listening.
You make me feel so good in the matters. You make me feel so good in the matters. I don't want to talk about anybody else in the way I do about you in the matters. You are like to
Listeners, as you may have heard, Meta, which owns Instagram and Facebook, is blocking Canadian access to all content created by news providers, including this radio station, in response to the Online Broadcasting Act. Access to local news and information matters to everyone, and while radio stations use their airwaves to keep you informed, we also use social media to share local news, events, and initiatives, and even content about our upcoming programming. We need you to write your MP and convey your concerns. Learn more and find a letter template for your MP on our website. Thank you for your support.
CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. As a campus and community station, CJSF strives to provide points of view that are rarely expressed on mainstream media. This includes music that is not the top 40 and news you will not find on the big media outlets. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca. Just a minute in time.